George Mitchell was appointed to the United States Senate in 1980 to complete the unexpired term of Senator Edwin Muskie, who resigned to become Secretary of State. He was elected to a full term in the Senate in 1982 in a stunning come-from-behind victory. He then went on to an illustrious career in the Senate spanning 14 years. In 1988, he was reelected with 81% of the vote, the largest margin in Maine history. He left the Senate in 1995 as the Senate Majority Leader, a position he held since January of 1989. Senator Mitchell enjoyed bipartisan respect during his tenure. He served as chairman of the peace negotiations in Northern Ireland, at the request of President Clinton, Prime Minister Barak, and as well as Chairman Arafat. He served as chairman of an international fact-finding committee that examined the current crisis between Israelis and Palestinians. In December of 2007, the Mitchell Commission released a report about the use of performance-enhancing drugs in Major League Baseball. George Mitchell will give the second annual Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture at MCLA on Thursday in North Adams, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Senator, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
A great pleasure to have you on the program once again. Even though you are out of the day-to-day politics of it as a candidate, do you still enjoy Election Day? Is there something that is special about it to you?
Yes, it always will be. Of course, it's not quite as tense when you're not a candidate on the ballot, but I still feel a little bit of nerves, wondering what's going to happen in the presidential race, in the Senate races, and in many others all across the country.
What have you, give us a perspective as a candidate of what Election Day is like for a candidate. Most of the work is done. You put it in the hands of the people. Your big event may be going out and voting. And then what is it like that then just sitting there and waiting?
It's a long day. Time seems to move more slowly for a candidate on Election Day than on any other day. But you have to keep yourself busy. I always did. In fact, I campaigned on Election Day in the mornings through lunch and then went back to my office and started a process of thanking people. I knew I was going to call and thank people no matter what happened on the day after the election, so I began the process early as a way to keep busy.
When you look at where we are now, and I mean, as I mentioned in the introduction, you have been such a model of bipartisanship in your work, both in and out of the Senate. And I'm curious as to what you make of a situation where there seems to be so much partisanship and so much bitter divide.
Well, it's obviously a very difficult time for the country, for those involved in politics at the national level, and really for the individuals themselves. I don't think anybody or very few people really enjoy the kind of tough campaigning and tough actions that occur between elections. On the day that I was elected Senate Majority Leader, one of the first persons I called was Bob Dole, who was the Republican leader. And I asked if I could come and see him. And he said, well, sure, of course. And I went over and saw him. Our offices were just a short distance away. And I said to him, look, these are very tough jobs, being Senate Majority Leader and Senate Minority Leader. And I think they'll be impossible if we don't have a trusting relationship between us. So I said, I'm here to tell you how I intend to behave towards you and to ask you if you will do so in return to me. And I said a few really simple things. I'll never surprise you. That's a big thing in the Senate. I said, I'll always give you notice of what I'm going to do so you can plan a response. I won't try to embarrass you. I won't attack you personally, publicly or privately. A few things like that. He was delighted. He agreed. We shook hands. And through those 6 years that I was Senate Majority Leader and Bob Dole was the Minority Leader, and to this moment, not a harsh word has ever passed between us. We disagreed every day on issues. We negotiated, we debated, we battled politically, but it was never personal, and we had dinner regularly. We spoke several times a day, and we now have a very cordial and good personal relationship. So it can be done, but it's gotten harder. I'm somewhat sympathetic to the people in the Congress, but truly, it's not going to change until the American people want it to change. Ultimately, the Congress reflects the will of the American people, and the divisions in Congress now reflect the divisions among the American people. That's the situation.
But even with those divisions, there can be civility. I mean, I was watching 60 Minutes on Sunday night when you had Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid sitting next to each other. And, I mean, there was not that warm, cuddly relationship that you just described with Senator Dole. And you come out of watching something like that wondering, especially with what was the, I believe the line at the end of the report is that the 20 of the senators are expected to 20 of the 22 are expected to be reelected. So it leads you to say, well, what then can be done, even if most of the American people say the system is broken and they would like to have it fixed?
Well, keep two factors in mind to establish a proper context for this. First, American politics has always been rough. There's a great quotation that a professor at the University of Maine uncovered of attacks made by Jefferson supporters on John Adams in 1800 and John Adams' supporters' response, which is way more over the top than anything that's been said in this campaign or in other recent campaigns. The difference is, of course, that that was on the printed page, read by a relatively small number of people sometime after the statements were made. It didn't pack the emotional power and the capacity for repetition that exists in electronic media and the negative ad on television, which has now become a dominant factor in American politics. But think then, secondly, about the gap or the divergent thinking among the American people. Almost everyone says they hate negative ads, but research has been absolutely clear that their people are moved by them. So as they say we don't like negative ads, they are influenced and moved by them, and their voting pattern influenced by them. Secondly, it is true that most Americans don't like what they regard as excessive partisanship, but they want the issues resolved their way. So they send two sharply distinct messages to members of Congress. We want you to do this in a nice way, but what we want done is consistent with our beliefs. And of course, on each side, the views of that are different. The real leader, the real challenge of leadership in a modern democratic society like the United States is to reconcile those conflicting public views, to find a way to resolve differences that involve reasonable and principled compromise, not a sacrifice of all conviction, but to accept the reality that in a divided country, especially one as large and diverse as this one, no one can have their way 100% of the time. And you have to be willing to accept the fact that the other guy may be right. And that's hard, given the political context in which members of Congress now operate.
But you're saying that those in political office are guided by their constituency, guided by the voters. But I look at you and I look at the career that you've had, and if you go into it with the attitude that you went into it with, okay, I am going to hear all sides and I'm going to have a civil conversation about this matter and I'm going to work this out and we are going to be friends with the people that we're working with and we're going to get something done, then don't the people then fall in line and support you? I mean, you won, what, with 81%? I mean, can it begin there?
Well, yes, it can, but I don't think I want to overstate this. First, I come from Maine, which is a relatively small state, in which there is a high level of personal contact with voters. I returned to Maine almost every weekend that I was in the Senate. I traveled to every community in Maine. I spoke at every single high school in Maine. I visited every industrial facility in Maine. You can't do that in Massachusetts or in New York or California or any one of the big states. So the absence of a high level of personal contact makes it more difficult to do it. I want to make clear that I don't think that the situation that I was in is the same for everyone else. I think a greater effort ought to be made, and people have to acquire the initial trust in you to be able to accept differences of opinion. That's much harder now with these attack ads that are constant, just literally constant. And I think the greater concern I have is, in addition to the negative attitudes that exist, is the enormous gap that has developed in American politics between the truth and what is said during campaigns. It's really rather incredible the extent to which statements are being made on all sides that really are not only not true, but in many cases are the opposite of the truth. And there doesn't seem to be any real penalty paid for that, and I think that is as disturbing as the negative tone of the ads. After all, a negative ad which is true may be unfortunate in the way that it's presented, but it's not a misrepresentation of fact. The real danger is that the ads that come out now are in some cases flatly untrue, and in others have, at the very least, exaggeration or incomplete presentation in a way that creates a false impression. I think that's even more dangerous.
George Mitchell will give the second annual Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture at MCLA in North Adams on Thursday night, and he's joining us on the roundtable this morning. When you look at, there was a, I believe in the opinion section of the New York Times on Sunday, there was a picture, a cartoon of the two candidates badly beaten and bruised after this campaign. I mean, you can look at it as even the winner, whoever wins tonight, is going to come out of this still hurt in some way, damaged.
Very much so, with about half the country pretty adamantly opposed to him. That's one of the unfortunate consequences of modern political campaigns, that governing after you win is increasingly difficult because there's a high level of hostility and animosity generated in campaigns that make it much harder to govern, and we really do need bipartisan governing in the coming 4 years and beyond because of the immense problems and challenges that our country faces.
You have said that President Obama has earned our confidence and support and deserves to be reelected. What is it, as a Democrat, what do you feel that he has done right?
I think two major things. First, we were on the brink of the abyss when he took office. We faced the most severe economic crisis, at least since the time of the Great Depression, three quarters of a century ago. 800,000 jobs a month were being lost in the last few months of George W. Bush's presidency, and that it carried into the first couple of months of Obama's presidency. He took what I think was correct and resolute action to stem the tide and to pull us back from the brink of abyss which we faced. It's awful hard to say to people, you should vote for me because I prevented things from being worse. That's not a persuasive argument for most people, but that's the reality. And it would have been much worse but for his resolute action. Secondly, in international affairs, he has provided a restrained, rational, stabilizing American policy that I think was very much needed. Think about the fact that he inherited two of what proved to be the longest wars in American history. He's ended the war in Iraq. He's ending the war in Afghanistan. Those are huge factors, not only in terms of the tragic loss of life, but also in terms of our debt and deficit. these accumulated trillions of dollars of costs in a way that contributed significantly to the debt and deficit problems that we now face. And he's restored, I think, the status of the United States around the world in a solid way. Think about that. The existence of nuclear weapons and the overwhelming military dominance of the United States makes the President of the United States arguably not just the most powerful person in the world, but among the most powerful persons in all of human history. And restraining the dissemination of nuclear weapons, preventing a conflict from erupting that could lead to nuclear conflict, remains a very important factor in the life of the United States and around the world. Now, that's been very little discussed in the campaign, but an American president has to be strong. He has to act with restraint, be prepared to use force when necessary and appropriate, but not as a matter of first resort. I think he's done an excellent job there as well.
What do you think that Mitt Romney brings to the conversation that is positive for the American people?
Well, I know Mitt. I served on the board of directors of Staples with him for a time, and I think he's intelligent. He's clearly an able person. I think that he has what I would call a strong sense of American optimism and hope for the future. And although I'm not going to vote for him, if he is elected, I hope that we will all join in trying to work together to deal with the problems that we face and which I earlier mentioned.
You are going to be speaking at MCLA on Thursday, giving the Michael and Kitty Dukakis public policy lecture. What message do you want to get across?
Well, after this interview, I'll have to think up a new speech because you've covered some of the basics. But I was asked to talk about the Middle East and foreign affairs. I'll mention briefly Europe, discuss the situation in the Middle East in somewhat more detail than I have here. There will be a question-answer period, and I expect that there'll be a good bit of questioning about the American political scene. We'll know by then, hopefully, who's been elected president, what the makeup of the Congress will be. So I fully expect to get into that, but more so in the question-answer period or listening to people making comments.
When you say, you know, hopefully we'll know, and of course that's one of the great fears, that this will be protracted, and when you look at it now, I guess ultimately there's nothing you can do about that other than hope for the best, right?
Well, hope for the best and act in the best way. There's going to be, according to press accounts and television accounts, a lot of dispute and discord in some of these states, and my hope is that every American who has a right to vote will be able to exercise that right. I'm frankly concerned about some of these efforts made that may have the consequence of depriving people of their right to vote, and that would be kind of tragic. You know, American history has been one of an expanding franchise. The Constitution, which we rightly revere, limited the right to vote to adult white men who own property. It's a very restrictive set of circumstances. It took 60 years and the bloodiest war in our history to extend it to all males. It took another 60 or so years to extend it to women. And it's almost impossible to imagine now, in retrospect, the bitter and ferocious battle that was fought against giving women the right to vote. And now, I think it's kind of a sad commentary on our society that we still have efforts being made to basically limit the right to vote just using different mechanisms. I hope that it's conducted in a way that precludes any use of fraud or anybody inappropriately voting, but not by preventing large numbers of eligible voters from voting.
George Mitchell will be giving the second annual Michael and Kitty Dukakis Public Policy Lecture at MCLA in North Adams on Thursday night. You can find out more information by going to mcla.edu, mcla.edu. Senator Mitchell, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. We look forward to having you in the region on Thursday. A great pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, find out more information about Senator Mitchell's lecture at MCLA on Thursday night by going to mcla.edu. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.